Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
What's up, everybody? This is Big Daddy's Hard Talk, Volume 45. I'm going to cue the intro music, but I ain't feel like going through all that hassle. And I wanted to get into what we're going to get into because there was definitely a shift in America the last 2 weeks, the last time I've talked to anybody. It was definitely a shift in America. Of course, you know, we had an election last Tuesday. Donald Trump, after all the stuff that went on, he is the president-elect. And not too many people are happy about it. There's been protests in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, a couple other places. There have been protests. There's been leaders that have come out to say, just give them a chance. I'm going to get my opinion on that a little bit later. But I have my two beautiful co-hosts here. I have Alicia Brown.
Hello, everyone.
And I have Faye Jackson.
Hey, everyone.
So I have Andino Ward, who is a community activist as well as a Black history buff, as well as just my mentor and somebody I really highly look up to as far as his opinions and as far as, you know, his, you know, how he feels about the world and stuff. So he's going to call in about 6:30. But I wanted to get you two ladies' opinion on what you witnessed the last almost week. And then we'll get my opinion. We'll take a commercial, talk a little wrestling, talk a little basketball, possibly. I'm going to let Dino say what he wants to say and let him have at it. But I'm going to start with you, Felicia. I know you're not feeling too well, and I apologize for putting you through this, but I wanted to get your opinion on what you think was happened this last past week in the state of America right now.
Sure, no problem. You know, the way I felt last week is nowhere near compared to, you know, I'm okay now compared to that is what I'm trying to say, but I just think, you know, it was already a really sensitive time in America, and I think it's more sensitive now more than ever. I'm certainly disappointed, and I'm just going to say it. I'm actually really disappointed in this country, the things that we let, you know, go. We're giving an example that it's okay to say and do whatever you want. And you get rewarded for it, and that it just has to stop. I'm not going to acknowledge, you know, person who won. I'm just going to say president elect or whatever. But I kind of refuse to say to say his name. But I will say that it's not just him. He's one person. I'm not really worried about that one person. I'm worried about the people who support and follow him, because those are the ones that will spread, you know, radical views, will spread hate, more hate. So I'm worried about the people who follow him. And I want to just address people saying, oh, well, you know, they're labeling the protesters as violent. They're labeling them as rioters. They're not all that. So we need to stop labeling and judging and being, you know, unsympathetic to people who are hurting. And we need to see and listen, less talking and more listening. The same way they shouldn't label those people as rioters, that's how the supporters of the president-elect feel when we label them as racist. So if you're not all racist, don't label everybody as all, you know, rioters or violent or animals, I've heard someone call us. And it's just not a good place to be right now in America. Just really sad. But I am wearing a safety pin today. There's a movement going on, a peaceful movement, hashtag safety pin. You all can look it up. And it's just a symbol of solidarity to show people that, you know, there are people out there that won't judge you. Who can you look for that won't attack you for being Muslim or gay? So I will be wearing a safety pin all this week. It sounds kind of silly, but I guess that word safety is what people are looking for now. And it's sad because people are fearing for their lives. They are fearing for, you know, their well-being and, yes, safety. They're being attacked. I've read just since he's been elected all of these attacks against gay people, Latinos, women, and it's horrible. Horrible. And I know he went on 60 Minutes last night, and he talked about the acts that are going on from his supporters, and all he said was stop it. That's not good enough. That is not good enough. I feel that he needs to denounce the KKK. He needs to denounce, you know, the acts from these followers, and it's just not enough. It's too little, too late. And I'll end it with this from my view. I'll say this, that not all people that voted for Trump are racist, but I feel that all people who are racist support Trump, and that says a lot. And the fact that racism and sexism and misogynists didn't stop them from voting, it shows that it went too far. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Valisha, you sound so sad. Everybody sounds so sad and depressed that that Trump got elected president. At first, I was upset. Like, when I woke up, I was just like, damn, like, what's going to happen? Like, I didn't even fear for myself. I feared for Honey. I feared for my stepson coming up in this. I feared for my little cousins that are in college. And, you know, they're in a part of town that is predominantly white. They go to these white schools. And I'm like, you know, what's going to happen with them? Like, the whole mood is going to change. But then, like, right after, the next day, I got to say, thank God for pro wrestling, because as I really have not been paying attention to what's been going on. I haven't watched TV in the past, like, 4 days, because I've just been so busy with wrestling this whole weekend, and we talked nothing about it. We were in our own world. Everybody was in their own world. We then, if somebody brought it up, they brought it up once, and it was like, oh, he's president now, ha, 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 but, you know, whatever, back to wrestling. That's exactly what happened. So I honestly, I don't, for me, and I made my statement, like, I was upset that he won, but at the end of the day, it just shows that anybody can do what they want to do. If you say you want to do something, you believe in yourself, and you get people to believe in you, you can do it. Hell, James, if you want to run for president now, and you keep saying it, for the next 4 years, guess what? You could be president in 2020. That's all it said to me. All I'm going to do is worry about myself, stack up my money, because people that have money don't have to worry about politics. That's how I feel.
Okay. I'm going to tell you why I got upset. I'm going to tell you why I got depressed. But I came out of it. But I blame a couple of different factors in here. And you can agree or you can disagree. It is what it is. One, the Democratic Party blew it when they nominated Hillary Clinton. Because it should have been somebody a little strong. Anybody else that would have ran against Donald Trump would have smoked him. And I'm not saying Hillary was a bad choice because she's a woman or because of, you know, some of the stuff she did. It was just that nobody wanted the same shenanigans that her husband did to happen in the White House again. So I guess he just left a bad taste in everybody's mouth that nobody wanted to see it happen. Everybody wants to see it change. And with that, they put him in. But with that change, you were willing to send a message to the world that no matter what you say, no matter what you do, you could be a bully. You could talk about building walls. You could talk bad about people because of their skin color. You could talk bad about how you want to do married women. You could talk bad about no matter what, and you'll still get elected president. So what you, the message you're sending to children is, no matter what you do, good, bad, or indifferent, if you got money, you can have the world by the ball. And it's a sad state of affairs. The fact that right after he won, there was a bunch of kids going into schools talking about, I'm just come out and say it is what it is, fuck niggas, Trump is president. There's been fights over this in schools now because of the ignorant attitude of what's going on. And like I said, because I did a Facebook Live prayer the next day right after the election, I know what it's like firsthand to see racism. It sucks. It's not good. It makes you feel bad. It makes people around you feel bad. And this was back in the 80s when I lived in a racist town. I know what it's like to be called everything under the book and not being able to do nothing about it. And with this happening the way it has, you just gave a ticket for this stuff to continue to go on, to continue to go on. I have three children, all African-American, two male, one female. I fear for my son because they're younger. They like to party. They travel late at night. I know what it's like to be out at night and get pulled over by the police and be harassed. I know what it's like to be out at night and not even be harassed by the police, but be harassed just by a bunch of white guys who get drunk and feel as though they want to yell nigga outside the car windows or whatever. I raised an African-American female, and anybody who wants to walk up to her and try to grab her and her pee, I hope her husband knocks them the hell out. This is the state of America now. There is racism is alive and well in America. Now, I'm not going to say that I've been depressed the whole week because after it happened, I had a meeting with the Sixers, which went good, and I started to come out of it. And then, you know, life does go on. We might endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. So, yeah. We're going to get over it. And, yeah, we got to watch exactly what he's doing. But with that, not only with him running the country, the House of Representatives is predominantly Republicans now. At least before, like, Obama was a Democrat. The House was a Republican. And before then, it was reversed. Now, you got a Republican president with a Republican House. They're all going to coincide and agree with one another. The whole thing to me was just a sham, and it was a bait and switch. Because all these people acted like they were against Trump, they weren't going to vote for him, they didn't want him in office. But when it came down to it, they all voted him in. They all stuck together. And I just fear, not for me, because I'm 45 years old. I've done what I have to do. My life is limited. Like, I'd be surprised if I live another 10 years, I'm be honest with you, because of my health, because of my weight and all this. And I'm being real with exactly what I'm saying. If I live another 10 years, it's a God blessing. But for people like Valisha Brown, people like Faye Jackson, people like my sons, my daughter, younger people who are going to raise families, who are going to do things in this world, who have to go through whatever is about to happen, we took a step backwards when we elected him. I don't want to see us go any further back than what we already have. Yes, we put a black president in the White House, and in 2008, I felt like, wow, America is changing. We got a black person in the White House. We have a black family in the White House. You couldn't have told me he would have got elected in 2008 if he had the same background as Trump. Because he didn't. He had a squeaky clean background, and they gave him hell. But Trump sides in with all the nonsense he's been through. I ain't even going to talk about too much of his past. The fact that he married the woman he cheated on his wife with, and then they had a baby. And all these people living in the White House now. Not the fact that the woman he did marry, who's the first lady now, you can see naked pictures of her on the internet. Let that have been Michelle Obama, they would have never been in the White House. And I'll wrap this up by saying this. Felicia said it best with what she said, not saying that all people who voted for Trump are racist, but the majority of racists voted for Trump. I can't say it no better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say this, and anybody listening, you can agree, disagree, I don't care. But if you are a person of color and you voted for Donald Trump, you deserve whatever you get from here on out. Whatever happens, it is what it is. Now, all these people saying, jumping, saying they moving to Canada, ain't nobody going nowhere. Let's be real. Ain't nobody going nowhere. Everybody will keep their black asses.
No,
right,
ain't taking people.
Yeah, exactly. Because they said as soon as he got elected, the website crashed, like to get your Canadian citizenship. It crashed because everybody was on the site trying to figure out, can they get their Canadian citizenship because they want to move to Canada. Ain't nobody going nowhere. But what we do have to do, excuse me, is to continue to protest, continue to fight, continue to get our voices heard in a positive way. I'm not saying go tear down the neighborhoods. I'm not saying burn down nothing. I'm not saying kick every white guy's ass that you see or nothing like that. I'm not saying that. I'm not advocating violence. What I'm saying is we have to stay active like they did in the 60s. They had sit-ins. They had protests. They did whatever they had to do to be heard. And any other person who didn't go out and vote, trust me, you have nothing to say now. If you didn't take that time to go out just to vote, then don't give your opinion. I'm going to tell you another story, and Felicia knows what I'm about to say. I got up that morning, 6:30 in the morning, because the polls opened at 7. I got my big ass up. I got out the house. I was hurting, but I still went. I pulled up. It was, praise the Lord, I was able to find a parking spot right in front of the where the polls were. So I was able to park right in front. The line was from the door all the way down the block. So I said, let me sit here and wait. So when I did finally get out of my vehicle to go stand in that line, they allowed me to go in front of everybody because I was out there in the cane. And they seen I wasn't moving that good. So they let me go in and vote. But even with that, that was a two-hour ordeal. I didn't get back home until it was well past 9-ish something. But I was not leaving or not going nowhere without voting. So I don't regret doing what I did. I just regret how it turned out. And I told my daughter this. I told my son this. That there was the two people who didn't go vote. And they're both old enough to do it. My daughter said, since I moved, I'm not registered down here, blah, blah, blah. It's bull crap. You could have got an absentee ballot and did what you had to do. Same thing with my son. That's bull crap. So to me, they have nothing. These are my kids that I love. But when it comes down to it, you have nothing to say about the state of what's happening because you didn't make the effort to find out how you could go about changing, how you could go about voting. If you could go online to look up some Michael Kors bags, if you could go online to look up some Jordans, If you could go online to watch wrestling stats and wrestling reviews, if you can go online to look at Little Yachty and Fat Toddy and Rocka Fati or whoever else is rapping right now, then you could have went online to find that out. And I'm fine. I'll get over this, like Faye said, life does go on, and I understand exactly what you're saying. But in the back of my mind, it always pops up. Whenever I hear the name Donald Trump, I just get angry. Because I'm like, how did it happen? Why did it happen? What did the Democrats do wrong? You sit and you think about it, and you say, okay. And I thought the greatest thing that could have happened was Dave Chappelle on SNL Saturday, and he did a skit about the election, and it was hilarious. It was hilarious, and now I've urged you to go online to see it. But he kind of nailed it. And that's where I'm just leaving it at. It's just, how do we look in front of the rest of the world now?
Right.
How do we look in front of our kids now? You talk to your kids about bullying, but your president bullied his way into the office by putting down people, talking about Muslims, talking about Mexicans, and then he tried to backpedal his way out of it after he was elected, because I don't even think he expected to win. But he did. Now it's his
job.
He
worked everyone. That's exactly what he did. He worked everyone.
He did.
He got people all hyped, and that's when, all the races did come out saying, we're going to vote for him because he's going to build a wall and blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, Trump ain't building no wall. Trump ain't deporting nobody. Trump ain't doing nothing. He's going to sit in that office and try to collect that money. That's exactly what he's going to do. Tax free.
He said he doesn't want that money.
So, tax free.
Yeah.
So, still ain't paying.
He's going to hook up all his buddies. And they all ain't going to pay taxes. You know who's going to end up paying taxes? Us. Us. And it's funny, just like somebody else said, 1% of the world controls everything. And it's just a sad state of affairs. So I'm going to leave it there. Any of you ladies got anything else to say?
Just, don't give up here. Everybody get your stuff together just in case he, decides to wild out. But do not give up. He still has people that he needs to answer to. I'm not, that worried because he doesn't have a political background, so he doesn't really know what he's doing. Unfortunately, people who voted, you did vote a Republican House and Senate, so they're controlling everything now, but a lot of those same Republicans also do not agree with him as well, so... it may not be all that bad. And all we can really do is just better ourselves. We can't complain about who's in office if, we're not doing anything to better ourselves either.
True that.
Go to school now. Get your good jobs now.
True that.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm a believer in Christ.
Yeah, and that's what it's going to take, is prayer.
Yeah.
And the Bible states that you have to pray for your leaders. So I'm going to pray for them. As much as I don't like them, I'm going to pray for them. That's all I can say. I ain't got to like you, but I can pray for you. I just pray he makes the right decisions. I just pray that he's not that big of a racist that he would try anything out of the way. And I just pray for the state of America in general, because I think that we really did send a message to the Klan, to skinheads, to whoever else out there who's singing white power. Say, okay, now we got somebody in office who's going to help us out with this. And when you really get down to it, how can he deport a bunch of people when they came over on a boat their damn self and took a land from the Native Americans? If anything, the Native Americans should be telling them, let's build a wall and keep all these people out. And with that, I will sip my tea and drop the mic. We're going to take a commercial real quick, And we'll be right back. Big Daddy's Hard Talk, Volume 45.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
And we're back. Big Daddy's Hard Talk. Excuse me. Volume 45. I am Big Daddy. I'm joined with Felicia Brown and Faye Jackson, my two lovely co-hosts. And before Andino Ward calls, he should be calling in about 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. Brush over a couple of things. Tonight on Raw, you're going to see Brock Lesnar and Goldberg in the ring at the same time. If they were smart, they would wait until the very last segment to do that to keep everybody watching until, but on WWE, they probably jump off the show with that and mess it up. Outside of that, you know, Survivor Series is this Sunday. I'm looking forward to watching it, see how it goes. If I can get y'all opinions on that, what y'all think about it.
From Survivor Series?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm a fan of the Raw versus SmackDown. I think that's good, kind of taking it back to the traditional Survivor Series, but I did read something that's kind of dangerous, and WWE needs to be careful of this and aware of this. The overkill of product that they're doing is just really making the product bland. I read that between the kickoff show and the actual Survivor Series is going to be 6 hours of wrestling, and that's not counting the 2 hours the night before for NXT, the 6 hours for the actual Survivor Series and kickoff. The next day you got another 3 hours for Raw. The next day you got another 2 hours for SmackDown. And then the next day you got another hour for NXT. That's 14 hours of, like, just pushing, you know, a product. And they really need to be careful with that. And it's not very smart either.
Okay.
Sorry, I went a little off topic.
That's okay. That's okay. Say, you got anything?
I honestly wish I could tell you I've been watching for the past 2 weeks, but I haven't. Like, I've been so busy with my own stuff. Only thing I know is James Ellsworth got signed because I talked to him the other day, so congratulations to him.
You know what, that happened, and that just shows I like to show when a dog's behind any day. So good for him. Good for him.
Yeah, look at who got elected president.
Yeah, really. But with that, we have a phone call. And he's called the show before, and he is a mentor of mine. I love him dearly. I wanted him to call in after what just happened in America, because he's going to, if you heard him speak before, the brother really knows what he's saying. And I thank him for everything he's done, and I appreciate the time he's taken out. Mr. Andino Ward, thanks for calling in. It's Big Daddy's Hard Talk, and we're here with Faye Jackson and Felicia Brown. How you
Hello.
Doing, bro?
Well, good evening. How are you all? It's a pleasure,
Hello.
As always, James, to jump on board, basically, and you know, talk about, obviously, the issues. And obviously, man, you got a great show, so I appreciate the fact that, you know, you've invited me to talk with you and with your audience.
I appreciate you calling. I'm going to sit back, and I want you to give your opinion on what just happened. And ladies, I know you're going to have questions for them, so, you know, give them your questions or whatever. Anybody that wants to call in, 718-508-9883, call in, ask questions, whatever. Dino, the floor is yours.
Okay, well, listen, you know, we all know that basically, excuse me, obviously I get on the phone and my allergies decide to you know, connect.
I know the feeling, bro. I know the feeling.
We all know that, you know, from a minority perspective, you know, there's always a situation that comes into play with where we are or where we aren't in the society. And the fact that basically, you know, in that, there is always that component of white supremacy that will always exist for us. I mean, it's just an inevitable fact. We are talking 400 years of involvement in this process, and it has always never turned out well for us or been something that is consistently moving us to the ability to have an independence that's ours. So we've had basically a president who's black for the past 8 years. And what have they really done to him, and what did they do to him? They made him basically a cautionary tale. They basically, you know, allowed him to get into office, but they did everything possible from the time of his inauguration. They said, we are going to do everything possible to ensure that we are a stigma to this guy. We are an obstructionist to this guy. We will not basically, you know, attempt to let him have a second term. We will allow him to do the minimal and no more. And if we can, we'll even basically push this to the point of him doing nothing. It is the most incredible example of basically, you know, what we as minorities, being black, Native American, you know, Arab, Muslim, I should say, basically, you know, and so on, will experience in a system like this. You are always going to be controlled by what basically the white, you know, supremacist majority in power will do. Now, it's very important to understand, you know, and I'm leading up to the Trump issue, but it's very important to understand that, you know, when we say white supremacy, whites need to understand we are not talking about the everyday white person, you know, minority, I mean, I'm sorry, you know, that's in the middle class and so on. We're talking about whites basically who have consistently been in control of the power positions in the government. We're talking law enforcement. We're talking basically politics. We're talking basically Wall Street. We're talking white people who basically are in power, who dictate the existence of everyone and who control the ebb and flow of that. The guy that lives next door to me, he's white, he's not a problem. He doesn't control anything. The only thing that basically happens to him is the fact that he doesn't understand. He's pretty much affected the same way I am. He just doesn't know it because he's white. So there is an aspect of privilege he will always have that is very different from the fact of me being black. Even the poorest of white people are considered better than Obama. Now, consider that. You know, you're talking a Harvard-educated guy, and even the poorest of white people would still be considered better than him because they're white. Just by that mere fact, that changes everything about who and what they are. Lyndon Johnson made a very astute statement on that, and I can't quote it verbatim, but he said, if you take the poorest white man and you basically lift him up and make him believe that even though he has nothing in his pockets, he has something in his pockets, and he then becomes basically one who feels better than the black person, you have done your job effectively because you have made him believe that even he, in his impoverished state, is better than even the worst, you know, impoverished black person. And that's exactly what basically white supremacy has done. They have made whites believe throughout the course of history that even no matter what circumstances they're in, they are better than us and what have you. They're always going to be better by virtue of their skin and obviously the privilege their skin gives them. So now we come to basically the election that just took place. And we look at the fact that for 8 years we've had a black president and they didn't really treat him well. They made him a cautionary tale that said, you black folks need to look at this. You minorities need to look at this because you will never see this again. This is an example of what we will do to you should you try to run again and put anyone your color in this office. So understand the cautionary tale we're giving you. You have seen what we did to this man. In spite of his education, in spite of his professionalism, in spite of all the good that this man is, 8 years and not one scandal in that office, a wonderful family man, a wonderful husband, a wonderful father, a graceful man, who took basically all that they threw at him and never basically exhibited any kind of anger, never basically spoke out of turn regarding it, but basically remained professional in all that he did, upholding that office and what that office means. And then comes this guy, bombastic, lies, racist, misogynistic, wants to talk about grabbing them by the pudding. It's like you have this guy that is the most abhorrent individual basically you could ever imagine running for the office of president, and you have all of these people, you know, who really love this guy. You have women walking around basically at his campaign, you know, events and what have you, and they're wearing shirts, you know, that have an arrow pointing down, white women, of course, saying basically, mm-hmm. grab me down here, you know, Trump. I mean, just it's like you witnessed the complete loss of the moral turpitude of a society. Totally lost their moral turpitude. They became Judases, and for a few shekels, basically, of silver, they sold their morality. And they have gotten exactly what they've got. You're looking at basically a graceful issue of first ladies who have graced the White House. And all of a sudden, now you have one, basically, who was a nude model, and her photos are all over the place.
Yes.
At no time in the history of the White House have you seen any first lady like that. Not one. At no time in the history of the White House other than, you know, Clinton doing what he did in the Oval Office. And, I mean, he paid the price for that, you know. But you have not seen a guy who vehemently states these things in open continuity to the public. And that's because, basically, you know what? People lost their minds. They really have lost their minds. And as far as black folks that voted for this guy, I'm going to be very frank as I've been. It's a straight-up house Negroes. Total house.
Thank
Negroes.
You. Thank you.
Watching
Thank
their
you.
Master's house and taking care of their master's house. You know what I'm saying? Because he's let them into the house. And they're obviously basically standing there before what they consider to be all the field Negroes. You know, and they're like, no, Massa's treated me good. Massa has me basically, you know, clean and doing well. And it's like, you know, what are you thinking here? Yeah, what are you thinking here? These are your people, basically, you know, and this guy is standing here as racist as possible, you know, giving credence to the Ku Klux Klan and all these other, you know, neo-Nazi groups who have now basically seen clarity from the forest because he's cut down the trees.
Mm-hmm.
They can come out now, you know, from basically being hidden in the forest. They can get real. They can be exactly who they are. And now he's put one of them in one of the highest positions in his office as presidency, right next to him, that controls the Breitbart situation. So, you know, there's a complete change that has taken place in the society, and that change basically is dangerous because, obviously, it threatens to take us back to the time of Jim Crow and all of these other things. But a lot of it, you know, whites are going to do what whites are going to do. Let me put it that way. They're going to do their thing, and they're going to be basically what they need to be about. If they feel that, obviously, things are going too one-sided to minorities, yeah, then you know what? You can expect them to react. They're going to basically, you know, trip out, you know, act like a few nuggets short of a happy meal and just go off. And they're going to, you know, their whole white thing is going to come forward. Fortunately, there are a lot of young whites who understand the nature of what's happening, and they're not going with it. They're not going with their parents. They're not going with the older whites. They're saying, like, no, this is not right. You know what I mean? And you see them in the streets right now, obviously protesting the aspect of Trump. So you're going to see a lot of this. The problem basically is, what happens with us? What have we learned here? What are we going to do? And I have to keep coming back to the same thing. We have been so integrated into the society that we have been watered down in our own right as African Americans and as black people. We have not maintained a consistent level of trying to do what we need to do. Trump came through with this whole thing, what have you got to lose? Your neighborhoods are crap. Your lives are crap. You're killing each other. You're being killed by each other. What have you got to lose coming to me? So here we have basically the plantation owner once again standing and saying to all the little good Negroes, you know, here I am, your master, your savior. You're going to pick cotton for me. But I'm going to provide basically food and clothing for you, minimally. And I'm going to take care of you. So what have you got to lose? I'm going to be a good master. Why is it that basically we would sit back and accept that? But we have been accepting it for 400 years. So why wouldn't we? At no point have we really attempted to unify ourselves to the degree that we should and establish our own situation economically. Again, I have to go back to the fact that every other group that enters this United States as an immigrant, and we're not immigrants. We were stolen and brought here, so let's get that straight. We never had the chance to immigrate. Okay, we were snatched. But the one thing about them is basically at least they understood the nature of this economy and this society. They all have their own economy. They all have their own ability. You look at basically Detroit or Michigan. I mean, you know, you're talking about the Arabs have that lock, stock, and barrel. Their community is, like, incredible in terms of the economics that they generate that basically is for their community and their people. And nobody calls them basically segregations. Nobody calls them racist. You look at the Chinese, incredible amount of basically economic wealth. You look at the Koreans. And James, you know, you're from Philly originally. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You look basically at Fifth Street, right here basically in Cheltenham. And you look at basically what is done. I mean, it is Koreaville to the max. You look at Cheltenham.
I remember back when it wasn't like that, because I lived in that area back in the early 70s into the 80s. It wasn't always like that. But then when I moved to Jersey and then came back to visit, I saw how the Koreans had took all that over, and I was in amazement. Like, wow, what happened?
You should see it now. You should see it now. Wow. You think basically it was – you should see it now. I mean, it's like crazy what they have done. It is crazy. And everything that they do is centered upon basically them and their, obviously, maintenance of their people's economy, and secondly, upon us, black folks, women, and their hair and their nails. And they are like on like popcorn, James, on like popcorn. They got them set up basically all over the place, and we're rolling in, laying out big bucks for the hair and for the nails and, you know, whatever else they have to offer. And then, obviously, you know, they've got the you know, Korean barbecue. It's all coming out of our pockets. But it's going into their community, and we're doing nothing. We're doing nothing. We have all, I mean, we have trillions of dollars. Trillions of dollars, basically, as black people, you know, in this country. But for whatever reasons, we just can't seem to get it together like all these other groups and create environments and create situations that are indicative of our growth. And now, basically, you know what? Now we have Trump. And God knows what he's going to do. We're talking about, basically, the potential of Rudy Giuliani walking back into office as the chief, you know, DA of the country. And putting, you know, profiling back in effect, putting stop and frisk back in effect, and all these other things. I mean, you know, we're talking some really, really devious things that are going to take place, and they're not conducive to our interests, and we need to be about the business of establishing a very distinct unity. African Americans, blacks, should be basically united with Native Americans, should be united basically with Muslims, should be united with every other ethnic group that is going to experience and has been experiencing the aspect of, you know, racism as we know it in this country. There should be a unification of all of our groups because there is a unified message that we are all being affected by, and that is the fact of white supremacy and racism. It's not that we basically are the same. And no, we're not, but we have the same impact. It's like, you know, if you have cancer, everybody goes basically to the same, you know, situations to get cured, and they get pretty much the same kind of, you know, medical treatment because they have cancer. You know, they all have cancer. It may be different types, it may be different levels, but it's all aimed at one thing, trying to eradicate the cancer. Well, we need to be about eradicating the cancer in our society, the cancer that is inflicted its pain, its abuse, its aggravation, its, you know, stupidity upon us. And then finally, we come to the aspect basically of the whites who voted for him. Trump is basically, you know, the biggest Trojan horse you could ever imagine, because he's pretty much going to snooker his own supporters. He's already started the process. There's not going to be a wall. Maybe there'll be a fence. There won't be a wall. You know, he's already said basically he's not touching, you know, Roe versus Wade. I mean, that'll be, you know, something that the Supreme Court does if it does it, and it'll be by the states. You know, so he started backing off a lot of the stuff that he's talking about because obviously he only did that to get into the office. And I'm really, really waiting to see these white folks, you know, to put him in there and see exactly what they're going to feel like in a year from now or 2 years, you know, when they finally begin to see, you know, which they're going to see pretty quickly, that he's really not basically the guy they thought that they thought he was. He has now perpetuated the greatest scam in politics ever. And this will be in the history books forever and ever and ever, because he has now created the next dynasty that will control the White House and could possibly control the White House for years to come, and that is basically through his lineage, his family, because he will bring every single one of them into politics, because now he controls the White House and they're all there. So like the Bushes were a dynasty, the Clintons were a dynasty. You are now looking at basically the worst of dynasties. You are looking at the terrible Trump dynasty. And who knows how long that'll go on. You know, the White House has now been returned to the white man. And it will never see basically a minority again. For as long as basically they can keep it that way, with a white family that can now become the next dynasty to take it over, and also the conservative issue. And last, evangelicals. I have no idea where they were basically thinking on this. For evangelicals who basically profess to know Christ and the attributes of Christ and the life of Christ and the beatitudes of Christ and the gospel, to take this man into their caucus, into their comfort, and to align with him, negating everything that is the gospel, I don't get that. I don't understand what gospel basically they know, because it's not the gospel I know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, it's nowhere near. But yet they abdicated everything that they are. And there's a price to be paid for that. I kind of look at it, James, in the context, basically, of the Jews in the desert. Basically, you know, when God kind of like, you know, basically said, hey, you want to follow pagan gods? Then I will hand you over to the pagans, the Egyptians. And you will be in bondage for, you know, 100 or more years. Because that's what you sought. You asked for that. I gave it to you. And their voices cried out, and they were basically in pain and agony. And they thought God did not hear them, and God grieved at their pain and their suffering. And eventually he did come around, and he sent basically, you know, someone to bring them out of bondage, Moses. But I'm just saying, you know, I'm not going all the way into that detail, but it's kind of like when I look at evangelicals, that's what I'm looking at. I kind of look at them like, you know, you're like the Israelites, basically, you know, who just decided, you know, you want to be contrary to God, and you want this pagan dude. I mean, who in their right mind takes a guy who says the things this guy said openly and publicly? And, you know, can't even say, you know, 2 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians. Because he doesn't know the Bible. He has no concept of the Bible. And he has admitted it. How do you take this? You know, that's where I rest my case, basically, you know, in terms of the issue of Trump. In fact, that, you know, we've permitted this to take place, and now we have it. Blacks didn't vote, you know, that should have. Blacks basically decided to go contrary to being, you know, obviously in the nature of our existence in this country, and they sided with this guy, you know, because they're thinking, you know, he's going to come in and take over our neighborhoods and make them better. Why would we want that? In 400 years, there has been no white man who's done that. So all of a sudden, 2016, you think there's one that's going to do it? It's never happened. So why would you think that instead of thinking we need to be about making our neighborhoods better?
Yes.
We need to be about doing what we need to do, irrelevant, you know, what he is. Because we've had no one basically white. Yes, we couldn't even get a black president to do it. So what makes you think he's going to do it? The guy that should have done it and should have been able to do it couldn't even do it. So, you know, that's pretty much where this stands, James. It's a terrible situation we're in, and much of it is to our own doing, because you know what? Everybody else is going to be okay. Chinese are not going to be affected. They're still going to basically have a community filled with economic prowess and ability. Koreans are going to be okay. They're still going to have neighborhoods filled with economic prowess and ability. Even Latins, to some degree, basically, you know, have the same thing going on, and they're going to be pretty much okay. You know, it's only the ones, obviously, that are in contention with the border issue that really have a problem, and they're Mexicans. They're not even really Latins. And what have you. So the Mexicans are going to get stepped on very heavily. You know, Native Americans are going to get stepped on very heavily, and black folks are going to get stepped on very heavily. And we all share the same thing, basically, in common, and that's the fact that we have no economic strength of our own.
I want to play devil's advocate real quick. With that, now, I totally agree what you're saying as far as we should open our black businesses, we should support black businesses, and this, that, and the fourth. I totally agree. But I know in my case and different things I've witnessed where I've went to black people of color, to do certain things for me, and they kind of not have done the job that I've asked them to do. So it makes me not want to deal with them. Like, I had a dude went to my church, African-American, and please, you know where I'm going with this story. I went to him because I wanted some T-shirts made because, you know, different T-shirts I was going to wear to Sixers games or whatever. Now, I dealt with him before. He did a pretty good job. So I went to him again, and he gave me the runner. I only gave him, like, 5 shirts to do. He said he couldn't do them all at once. He had to do 2 here, 2 there, whatever. I said, fine. He asked for all the money up front. But he wasn't going to give me all the shirts. Even with that, I said, okay, we're going to take church. I love you. Here's the money. This brother did crappy work to the point where, like, I wore the shirts once, washed them. They were all washed out. They looked like crap. It was what it was. I said, that's the last time I go back to him. Now, I go down to a Delaware 87 this game. I'm watching the game. I had one of those shirts. So when a dude looked at me that has a printing business or whatever he has, offered to do shirts for. I gave him the shirts. He did it. Great job. All he asked, if he could just put his logo on my sleeve, I said, fine. Didn't charge me a dime. or none of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here like, okay, I tried to hook a brother up so he could do this. He screws me. And then a white man came, did a good job, and didn't charge me a nickel.
I completely understand what you're saying, and I completely agree.
So if we're going to open businesses, we have to do good jobs at it. Not because, you know, we had this business and we got our people coming in there, we're going to screw them or do lousy jobs. Mm-hmm. We have to do a great job. So if you do a great job for me, the first thing I'm going to do is tell everybody, go here. This guy did an excellent job for me. You know what I'm saying? Not just,
oh yeah,
all right, we go to the same church. I ain't got to, you know, worry about really doing that great job because he ain't going to say nothing about me. And I wouldn't get this dude to make a shirt for my dog if I own the dog. Because of the fact that he screwed me around and he didn't do a good job. Then I had a nerve to ask him to fix the ticket.
Well, see, the end result on that is very clear, and you are right. I mean, this is another you know, situation that is a very, very big disease in our people. But it's a disease for a specific reason, because we have not basically been taught the aspect of good business, and we don't try to really learn the aspect of good business. And finally, because we are so intact upon bringing each other down, we don't understand the nature of the fact that basically good business advances the aspect of our culture and our existence in the economic prowess of being, you know, black-owned businesses. So we're in certain deficits. And if I had to put it, let me put it as an example. The British basically colonialized India years ago. I mean, and they ran roughshod over India. They basically, you know, made the people subservient. They took all of the natural resources because that's what they wanted. That's what they were there for. And then basically, you know, they tried to give the Indians a semblance of how democracy works. And then they left. They didn't basically spend enough time trying to teach them how to make it work. They just basically gave them kind of like a precursor, and then they split, you know, ended colonialism and went back to, Britain, you know, the UK. Well, the Indians basically in India didn't understand the full complement of democracy, and they tried to do whatever they could based upon the limited amount of information the British gave them, but it didn't work because they didn't understand it totally. So it couldn't work. It's the same thing with us. We have been so sequestered in the aspect of being a commodity. And we need to understand that. We are a commodity. From the time we were basically ripped off from Africa and brought to these shores, we have been nothing more than a commodity. We are basically something that funds everyone else but has never really completely understood the nature of funding ourselves. We're handed to everyone. Everybody owns a piece of us. Even in the aspect of this election, with basically, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, what was the main thrust that you heard when you heard, you know, of each group talk about African-Americans? What were they saying?
Just trying to get us out to vote.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're a commodity. We're a total commodity. You know, we need the ethnic vote. We need the black vote. Yeah, well, okay. We need basically, you know, the white support. We need basically, you know, the fact that you are going to obviously, you know, in some way give us the opportunity to really create what we need to create for us. But all we get is you took our vote, and we still remain in the same position and will be in the same position until it's time for basically you to need that vote again.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing changes for us because we are the perpetual commodity. And that is something we need to understand. We are a commodity. I don't care basically if it's dudes, you know, obviously wanting to, you know, sell, you know, crack, you know, or herb or whatever it is. They don't even understand that as African Americans, as black, you know, basically men and women, they are still a commodity. Consider this. And this is something, you know, I'm working on a documentary to this effect. Consider the aspect of African Americans like in the drug trade. Consider the fact that basically, you know, they're not doing anything that is any different from the Italians did, the Jews did, the Irish did. and any other ethnic group that came over here that was disenfranchised from the aspect of, you know, the greater society. They all basically adopted a situation of, okay, if we can't do what you do, then we will create the means by which we need to be able to do what we need to do to get to where you are. The one difference that no African-American or black person understands in terms of these illegal situations they're in is the fact that basically the Italians controlled everyone. They controlled the courts. They controlled the politicians. They controlled everybody. It wasn't just that they were basically doing illegal activities. They controlled people. And eventually they took the situation and they made sure that their children would not be part of the criminal environment. They knew that some would because they were just like, you know, they weren't going to really be educated guys. They didn't want to, you know, deal with education. So these are going to be the cats that became the lieutenants, you know, the thugs that would do basically whatever needed to be done to continue the criminal, you know, endeavors. But they made sure that their children became the lawyers, the doctors, the judges. That's why Giuliani is what he is. They made sure of that. But you look at basically the African-American in the drug trade, and what are we? We have no control over it other than basically the fact that we deal what's given to us to deal. And basically, we are then a commodity to fill the prison system. So we're allowed to be criminals, but not even good criminals, because basically we need to ensure that we can then move them into the judicial system so that obviously the DAs can eat off the plate, the criminal attorneys can eat off the plate, the cops can eat off the plate, everybody can eat off the plate, the prison system can eat off the plate. So what are we? Still a commodity. Always a commodity. And that is our problem. We don't understand the nature of what we are, what we have always been since we hit these shores, and still today we remain a commodity to be used by everyone for some purpose, economically, socially, whatever the case may be. Votes, a commodity. Does that make sense? Okay. Do you understand, you know, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel you. Ladies, do you guys have a question?
Yeah.
Before, you know, we put a bow on this?
No, we pretty much covered, you know, what's going on, what has been going on, and what we need to do. It's just a matter of the people. And I'm sorry, but I'm not, you know, too believing that, you know, the people are going to do what they need to do. So it's
why is that? Why do you feel that way? Why do you feel that they're not?
It's just been a recurring thing, you know. We're just the discussion you guys just had, you know, it's within each of us, and the resources may not be there. The people don't have a drive to utilize these resources. I just don't think we don't know how powerful we are and how powerful we can be and what we achieve. I'm just not hopeful for it.
Well, and you're
sad.
Right. I mean, it is a sad state of affairs because, you know, over 400 years, you would think that we would have learned something, that we would change this situation in many ways. But let's understand something. The system of supremacy is a powerful system. It is a beautiful system in what it does and how it does it. It has the ability to always manipulate and change its scenario in any way it needs to have an impact and an effect upon those it is trying to basically maintain and trying to keep sequestered in its grip. I am watching right now a situation. I'm going to cover these last two things. I'm watching a situation where now, basically, if you start to notice the commercials that are on TV, you notice that you're beginning to see a lot of basically mixed couples, you know, black and white.
Right.
Well,
yes.
That is basically almost what you would consider a final solution. It really is, you know, a white supremacist, you know, final solution. Because what it's doing is it is completely creating the scenario by which, and it is said by 2050 it will probably, you know, be this, and it's actually shown pictures of what African Americans will really look like, because they won't be basically black anymore. They'll be mixed. So by the time you get into the situation of, like, even beginning to discuss the potential of reparations, you won't even have black folks around because they will be so integrated that basically, you know, they will not – you will still have black folks. Don't get me wrong. But they'll be the ones basically pretty much in the hood filling the prisons and obviously all the other things that, you know, the society needs. But basically you won't have a good resource of them because they will be nullified by virtue of obviously the integrating of the races and what have you, which there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, listen, if you love someone white, you love them. You love someone black, you I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem basically with the fact that there's a systematic thread that will always exist with supremacy because it is always moving to make sure that it controls the game and that it stays ahead of everything that's going on. Because at some point, they're going to have to pay reparations. They're going to have to do something because this is going on too long. My theory is this. We have played around basically with the governmental aspect of our problem with white supremacy for so long that we have lost sight of certain things. What really needs to be happening as far as black folks are concerned, American Indians in particular, because we are the two major groups who have been impacted by white supremacy, and the Indians even before we were. I mean, they hit them basically, you know, long before we hit the shores. We are the two groups that basically should be uniting intensely heavy. But instead of basically going to the DOJ and to the NAACP and all these other groups, we should be going to the United Nations. And the United Nations Human Rights Commission is who we should be invoking. We should be invoking them to invoke the world to hold sanctions against the United States for its treatment of African Americans from the time of slavery up until this point and what they have done to us as a people. The Native Americans should be in league with us in that regard, talking to the United Nations Human Rights Commission that they will basically put in effect universal sanctions because the United States does it to other countries. If they feel that there are human rights violations, what do the United States, what's the first thing they do? They put sanctions against them.
Yes.
They hurt their economy. We should be doing the same thing. The Justice Department can't react for us because the Justice Department is too colluded with white supremacy. It can't do its job effectively beyond a certain degree because if it could, we wouldn't be here. With all of the killings of African Americans by police, have you seen the DOJ do anything that has changed the course of events with that?
Nope.
No, because they can't. You can't act against yourself. We need to be going to the United Nations, and we need to be holding court with them the same way basically every other group holds court with them, the Palestinians. You know, everyone holds court with the United Nations. There are human rights violations that we have endured in this country for over 400 years, and still we have had no redress, no recourse, and nothing that is put basically to rest and changed the course of events. We are still being impacted by the principles, the precepts, and basically the laws of this country that react and are put in place against us. Forget them. I don't want to deal with basically the Department of Justice. I don't want to deal with the Civil Rights Division. Let somebody else do that if that's what you want. I'm not saying we shouldn't. That should be part of the equation. But we need to be basically putting in a much greater degree of enforcement upon these people, something that will make them stand up and take notice and listen and not think they can get over and basically use white supremacy in the way they do to manipulate events and basically get ahead of you so that before you get there, they've already basically changed it and you're just walking into something that you think is yours, but no, it's really not because we already changed it and these idiots don't get it because we're more powerful and obviously we can control the game. We need to be basically with the United Nations because the United Nations has been talking about this. If you're following them recently, they have been talking about this. And that's where we need to be headed. We need the Human Rights Commission. We need to basically be invoking the aspect of other countries. Because, look, the French basically owe the African-American basically just as much as the United States does. They were part and parcel of slavery. The British, they owe. Spain owes. Everybody basically was involved in the aspect of slavery. Everybody. J.P. Morgan, General Electric, they all made money off of this and off of us. And we should be basically invoking the most massive and the most powerful agenda against all of them to let them know, no, no more. Your white supremacist game ends here, and we will take basically the United Nations to bring you to task and the human rights violations. The Jews did it basically with Nuremberg and the Germans. So what is it we're missing here? Why are we playing around with this? The Jews basically put into effect the most articulate degree of bringing Nazis to basically fruition and to obviously pay for what they did. They created organizations that secretly went out and found them when they were trying to hide. They did everything. They did not mess around basically with, you know, some menial court thing. They went to the world court, and they created Nuremberg and the Geneva Conventions and all of those things and all of the organizations that basically they created to find the Nazis who killed their people and bring them to justice in the world court. And what are we doing? So that's the last thing I'm going to say. If we don't get that basically under control and understand we need to go beyond our country and we need to go to the world and we need to put pressure on other countries to say, you know, you're right. Black folks basically have suffered immensely. American Indians have suffered immensely. They are still suffering. That should not be in a power as great as the United States, and it needs to own up to what it's done, and we will basically impose sanctions upon it until it does. That's okay. It, my man.
Again, that's it. You ladies have any questions before I let Dino go?
No, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. That was very insightful.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I thank you. In time, it will come to pass. You know, I'm going to be working my hardest to do that. I'm really basically talking with people right now about the UN thing and dealing with basically the UN and what the legalities of it are and how we can bring that about. I want to begin to connect with various groups, both Native American and in the Black, you know, community, to discuss the aspect of the fact that we need to take it to this. Because, you know, we're not going to see any change unless we get really intense and really go beyond this. And I don't know that all Blacks will basically reap the benefit of this, because some are just going to be perpetual house Negroes, as it just is. Yeah, they're always going to be about basically, you know, the sex drive and all the other madness. But I can't be concerned with that. I have to be concerned with the fact that there are some who will and that we can change the course of events in some way for all, or at least damn near all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, James, Father, I truly appreciate you, my brother.
No problem. Before I let you go, I want you to plug your website real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, for those basically who are really looking at understanding a lot of Black history, because that's another area that I could talk forever about, but just to say that we have been sequestered, lied to, our history has been hidden, and it's completely being hidden, and really white supremacy is trying to change it as though it never happened, as though it never existed.
Mm.
History books basically in schools throughout the, you know, like Texas and other states are being revised to reflect that basically, you know, slavery was just, you know, like a, it was like a little, you know, party thing. It wasn't really, you know, what it really was. So if you go to my website, www.demdred, and Demdred is D as in David, E as in Edward, M as in Mary, B as in David, R as in Richard, E as in Edward, A as in Apple, D as in David.com, you'll see a lot of information basically about the history, you know, of our people and things that we don't really discuss. I mean, for instance, if you didn't know it, the very stoplight that you stop at every single day if you drive and you're in your car, that was created by a black
man. Invented by a black man. I knew that.
Exactly. I have the patents. The aspect basically of, you know, eyeglasses, that was created by a black man. The golf tee, created by a black man. Potato chips, a food that everybody eats and that everybody loves, that was created by a black man.
The regular potato chips are barbecue flavor.
Hey,
oh,
listen,
my God.
Let me tell you, all that 20,000 bags of barbecue potato chips, that was created by a black man. Did you ever hear that? Have you ever heard that in any history?
Find it yourself. Yeah.
Right. But it's been, we did that.
Yeah.
So my website will show you a lot of those things, basically, as it also talks about our history in general and some of the things we've been through. and some of the things that obviously we're still going through. And it talks about great music, not this crap that basically, you know, these cats are spitting out now that's totally about, you know, demeaning and defaming the aspect of, you know, our people and our lives in general, but really good music, music that, that really has meant something. And just information. Information, you know, you'll find a blog that I'll be starting on there and, you know, a bunch of other things that are going to be happening. But it's all about giving African-Americans, black folks, the information that we have not been receiving and that we should be receiving and that our kids have no knowledge of, which is why a lot of them are so left out in the cold. They don't know the greatness that we are, you know, and that we've been and the contributions we've made.
On that note, Dino, I thank you again. I still want to link up with you when we both get time so we can grab something to eat and talk some more. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for your opinion. I love you like a father.
Hey, I love you too, my brother. Listen, I miss basically, you know, those days at a dance party, but, you know, that's ancient history. But that was a lot of fun. But, hey, listen, man, you know, my time is passing, my brother. I mean, I'm 62. If the Lord, you know, is with me, I'll have maybe 20 more good years, you know. But you're the man. The time is passing to you. You know what I'm saying? You're the young man, and you're the man basically to pick up the torch, you know, and take it forward. And, I mean, I can't think of anyone better, in my opinion, to do that, you know, because you've always been a starch, you know, and strong, you know, young black man, and that continues. So I look at that, and my heart is happy.
Thank you, sir. That means a lot coming from you. All right, have a good evening.
Yes, indeed. You all have a great evening, and God bless now.
Thank you. You too.
All right now. Bye-bye.
Wow. I don't even know what to say after that. I don't even know what to say after that. But let's take the second commercial, and then we'll put a bow on this show. We're running over the time we normally do, but it is what it is. When somebody's spitting knowledge like that, I just want them to go, because to me, that's just something that's missed amongst our youth now. It's the fact, just like he had wrapped it up with, it's just the fact that we don't know our own history, and we have to start to teach our children, because they don't know. They really don't know, because they have grown up with reality TV and internet, Facebook, Snapchat, this, that, and the fourth, and nobody wants to pick up a book and just read. So, anyway, take this commercial, be right back, Big Daddy's Hard Talk, Volume 45.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson with TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
And we're back. Big Daddy's Hard Talk, Volume 45. The revolution will not be televised. Fight the power. I'm here with Faye Jackson and Felicia Brown. And we're about to put a bow on this puppy and send it home. No real Sixers news. Sixers got their first victory last Friday night. Yay! And then they got their ass whipped last Saturday night. Yeah, the next night, but they played Atlanta. It was what it was. Atlanta's very good. Dwight Howard has reached. Establish his career. He found a fitting in Atlanta. He found like he knows now that he can't be the man, but he could be a part of a system. And he's a rebound. He's a rebounding juggernaut now, and it is what it is. But on a lighter part, the Sixers have been looking well. They haven't been really blown out, maybe, but once, twice this season, and they pulled off a real good game Friday night in Tracy's Jinx. And and it is what it is. Faye, you got any wrestling dates coming up?
No, not that I can think of off the top of my head. I got prep for this interview tonight with Fox Sports in Baltimore. I'm doing a call in. They want to interview me.
Oh, wow.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
And I just found out that, well, they found out for me, I don't know, like, you know, when the websites do polls, like, who's the hottest thing right now or whatever. So I'm number 12 out of 20. I'm number 12 out of 20 women of the hottest independent wrestlers right now. And I'm the only black one, and I'm the only plus size one. So,
yes.
That's a good thing.
I got to talk about that for a little bit.
That's a real good thing. That's really good. And we're all proud of you. And every time I see a picture of you at a show or whatever, I stick my chest out because I'm like, she really deserves it. She put her time in. She busted her ass in the ring. Keep going. Because professional wrestling needs you. And Felicia, you got anything before we wrap it up?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. I'm going to end it with this. Keep me in prayer. You know, I got some decent news. I did meet with the Sixers, and we got a bunch of things going on as far as the revolutionaries, and they really want to blow up the fan section and do a lot with us, and they want to do another Blue Blood segment featuring me again. So this be the second time that they wanted to feature me in the Blue Bloods as far as crazy fan section. And it's cool. Like, the first time was great. The next time I know it'll be better. And I thank them for, you know, everything they've done for me. And also, in 2017, I will be shooting a documentary on my life. And I'm going to have a film crew following me around. Just talking about being a fan and my everyday life and this, that, and the fourth. And I'm like so humbled by that because, you know, it's a whole documentary just about Big Daddy. So it's cool. So I'm going to get naked in it. I'm joking. But So on that note, you know, things are good. You know what? But I will end it with this. Things happen to people who bust their ass and work hard at what they do. Felicia, you went to school, you went to college, you went to high school, you graduated at the top of your class, you went to college, you graduated at the top of your class, you busted your ass as far as school, you did well, you are the boss at your job because you busted your ass, and you know what it's like to work hard. You work two different jobs now because you know about hard work. Faye, you know about hard work as far as getting that ring, going there. You was taking public transportation to get to the dojo two or three times a week. That's about busting your ass and working hard. Me, I busted my ass as far as training, as far as wrestling. I busted my ass as far as the game with the Sixers. It's rare when I miss a game. I must be really sick or in the hospital for me to miss a game. Even at my lowest point, I had people wheelchair me in and out that stadium because I wanted to be there. So everything that comes to me after this, I know I've earned. So basically the reason why I'm saying this is good things happen to people who bust their ass to do what they do and they earn what they earn. Nothing is given to you in the life. And I'm going to end it with that.
It's really not. You got to work hard for it. And I'm still working hard for it.
Exactly. And you will continue to work hard for it. It's just a start. It's just a start. You will continue to work hard for everything. But you got to stay vigilant and you got to stay determined. And that's the thing. I'm determined that one day my name is going to be in lights. I'm determined. All this that I've been doing, I know eventually has to blow up. And I want to say not just my family, but my community. I want to do so many things in the community, but I'm going to need money and I'm going to need a name behind me to do it. So the only way that's going to happen is to continue to be out there to do it. And I want to do so much with youth because what I see now, these little kids walking around here in the street cussing and humping and just disgusting. They need a focus. They need somebody who guide them to help guide them the right way. And I think I could do that. And I think the people around me can also do that. On that note, thank you both for giving me your time. Good luck tonight, Faye. Felicia, I hope you feel better. You know, I love you. Both of you. There's three different types of people in the world. Those who don't know what happened, those who wonder what happened, and people like Big Daddy, Felicia Brown, and Faye Jackson that make things happen. Good night. God bless you all.
Good night,
everyone.
And Faye, you ain't shit.